And I think it's also a really interesting study in how to write a book, particularly one that doesn't follow a traditional structure and that doesn't follow convention.
Welcome to the Book Society podcast, where we talk to interesting people about interesting books. It's really that simple. We're back. We're talking about The Swimmers by Julie Otsuka, which was released by Doubleday in 2022, the same year that Sweet Soft Plenty Rhythm, Laura's book, came out. And this book is very interesting and beautiful and eerie and different. It's very different. When you described it to me briefly, we spoke on the phone a week or so ago, and you mentioned that half of the book was in the first person plural. And when you said that, I just thought that either you misspoke or that was like some kind of, I was just like, that's not a thing that you could do. And the first half of the book is indeed in the first person plural.
Yeah.
It is strange, and but it makes perfect sense and tells the story in this really interesting way. And then the book just moves on to being this story about her mom. So if you want to read The Swimmers, it'll take you, you know, 2 hours. It's very short.
It's really short, yeah.
Go read it. But yeah, it starts with this description of people who swim in a pool. And among these people who swim in a pool is this woman with dementia who I think later is her mom.
Yeah.
And then the second half of the book describes how her mom got to the point that she got to and what it's like to have that disease and what it's like to care for someone with that disease. And it is just, it's just an intense book.
Yeah.
So I should ask you a question. The first question
no,
I was asking
I
is,
totally...
why did you pick this book?
So there are a couple of ways to answer that. I really like strange, unusual premises, and both as a consumer of storytelling, of stories, and a writer. So when I hear that this is the premise of a story, and to me it's like, well, that sounds kind of funky. I want to know how the writer executes it. And so the way this book has been, you know, the elevator pitch is that there are a group of people who are swimming in a public pool, and a crack starts to form at the bottom of the pool, and it sort of upsets their lives. That sounds like both the most boring story in the world and potentially the most riveting, right? Mm-hmm. If that writer does something really interesting with that premise. And obviously for me, it's the latter, right? This, to me, I was like, wow, how is she doing this? So that was part of it. Part of it was my decision to read it. I'm a fan of Julie Otsuka. So that was one reason. Anyway, I was going to read it anyway. But also, wow, how is she going to do this? I have an idea for a book that might be my third book that's sort of similar, where if you go up to most people and say, would you like to read a book about people who swim in a pool and then there's a crack in the pool? They go, no, right? And so I just love that this is where the story comes from. And not only does she explore the psychological and like community impact of a crack in the pool, she really tells a story that is so rich and, as you said, so intense. And it all comes from this seemingly insignificant event, which is the crack in the pool. So that was why I read it, or chose to read it. And so Julie Otsuka wrote a book called The Buddha in the Attic. It was a bestseller, actually. And it's about women who are immigrating to, I believe, somewhere in California. And the whole book, if I remember correctly, or at least most of it, is in third person plural. We do this, our houses, this affects us. And when I first started reading it, I didn't know a lot about her at the time, but it was a national bestseller and lots of the writers who I admire were saying a lot about it. So I read it, started reading it. And there was a moment where I thought, wow, is the whole book going to be told in the first person plural? That's really challenging to stick with for an entire book. And I looked ahead and was like, yeah, she is. Well, I'm going to stick with it. And I'm really glad I did. because it was amazing. It's similar to, and I was going to mention this to you, have you read, this is a totally different book, but a similar experience. Have you read Daisy Jones and the Six? It's a TV show now too.
Nope.
So Daisy Jones and the Six might have even been a good book to share with you for this podcast. Daisy Jones and the Six is about a band that I think is loosely based on Fleetwood Mac, or, you know, seems a lot like Fleetwood Mac. And it's about how the band came together and their journey to stardom and the relationships inside the band. And the book is written as just like one of those behind the scenes, behind the music or whatever documentaries. And it's just quotes, you know, of the band for the entire book. And I had the same experience where I started reading it. And then I was like, is she going to do this the whole time? There aren't going to be actual scenes and narrative. It's just going to be a bunch of extracted quotes from a fabricated, you know, documentary. And it was, I looked ahead and I was like, all right, I'm going to stick with it. And I'm again, really glad I did. So I like that too. I like premises that are really unusual and that you want to see how is this writer going to execute it. And this idea of the, you know, crack at the bottom of the pool was interesting to me for that. And then just the structure is unique. How is she going to pull off, in the case of the swimmers, the third person plural in a way that is going to keep a reader's interest? And I think she really did, as you said, because not only was it interesting for me to contemplate this crack, there are consequences for all of the people who go to this pool. It's not just like, oh, is the pool going to get dirty? Maybe we shouldn't use it anymore. It's affecting their lives. It's affecting their relationships. It's affecting their understanding of themselves, right? But then also, as you said, we start getting a more narrow lens and focusing on, now I'm forgetting her name. I think it's Alice, right?
Alice, I think.
The mother. And so during the third person plural in the section in the beginning of the book, Alice is the only person who really recurs, right? We get her name. Mm. There's some other names, but for the most point, Alice's name is the one we hear the most. So even though we're getting the third person plural and we're getting this sort of communal view of the people who go to this public pool, Alice starts to emerge as, you know, a key character to follow, right? Mm. And you learn that she's older, you learn that she's, you know, sort of graceful and loving and that sort of thing. And then by the time you get to, I think it's about the middle of the book, then we switch to Alice's POV, right? So, and then you start to get more of a sense, you know, I'll read a little bit. So for instance, I will read just a little bit. The pool, this is the beginning of the book. The pool is located deep underground in a large cavernous chamber, etc. Some of us come here because we are injured and need to heal. We suffer from bad backs, fallen archers, shattered dreams, etc. Others of us are employed at the college nearby and prefer to take our lunch breaks, etc. Then immediately, one of us, Alice, a retired lab technician now in the early stages of dementia, comes here because she always has. So in the beginning of the book, you have we, you have us, and our lives, and our jobs, and our families, and our relationships, and our need for this pool, right? All of these characters need this pool. And so once it starts being corrupted by this crack, people's lives are upset. But then Alice is still emerging as this character, so that by the time we get to the middle of the book, we know her, we care about her, we're interested in her, and then we, you know, dial in on her. So the first section with Alice is she remembers her name, she remembers the name of the president, she remembers the name of the president's dog, et cetera. I wonder, and I'm kind of curious if I can ask you, whether it felt redundant, right? And that's a risk of the style, right? That not only are you using the first person plural and then, you know, using the third person singular, she, but that it's really, I mean, this first section, this first page, she remembers her name. She remembers the name of the president. She remembers what town she lives in. She remembers what year it is. She remembers the season. That's just, it's the same line.
Yeah.
Right.
How did you feel about that? I mean, that's like a, that's like a whole chapter.
Yeah.
She remembers that tells a story. And
right.
Yeah, I loved it. I mean, that's why I said in the last episode that this reminded me of a book of poetry. And
right.
I thought this was, you know, as you were, I don't think I really quite got this. I read this earlier this week, and I like to, like, if I can, mm-hmm. give it a couple of days to just kind of seep in.
Yeah.
And I think I just, maybe Julie Otsuka would disagree with me, but it seems like the pool is a gigantic, and now that I'm thinking about it, almost ham-fisted metaphor mm-hmm. for Alice's mind.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like, you know, all these people in the pool don't have names, but they're all just the different aspects of her personality
mm-hmm.
that have to work together
mm-hmm.
to, you know, for her to exist. And they're all working in relative harmony in this cavern, you know, inside, mm-hmm. like, you know, the way she describes it could be the inside of a head,
mm-hmm.
could be the brain inside of a head. And then once this crack starts to form, this is her atrophy, her dementia.
Yeah.
And there's all this, you know, and there's to support this argument even further, once the crack forms, there are all these experts that come in
mm-hmm.
and look at it, which is not what happens in real life. If mm-hmm. a crack forms in your pool, you get a pool guy.
Mm-hmm.
You don't, there's no teams of experts or mm-hmm. geologists
mm-hmm.
or anyone who figures this stuff out. This
mm-hmm.
is, this is a plaster problem, you know? And so the idea that there are these teams who are coming in saying, well, no, this didn't form for any reason, is sort of like, well, you're having this sort of idiopathic brain
mm-hmm.
problem. And then once the crack gets so bad that they have to close the pool again, something that absolutely would not happen, that they have to close the pool permanently.
How do you know? They, like, for a public pool, though, right?
I mean, they might drain the pool, fix the crack, and put it back.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they're not going to close the pool forever. Also, I mean, there's also all these other things that, like, you know, different theories about the crack, about, like, how there's an underground river that has been
right
in there forever, and, like, you know, that seems to me like some kind of religious, you know,
mm-hmm.
like that her personality is the water in the pool and it's seeping into the,
mm-hmm.
join the waters of the, you know, eternal underground river
mm-hmm.
or whatever. And that you're right that I don't really know exactly the workings of a public pool, but
mm-hmm.
I have, like, maintained pools before, and a crack in a pool is not usually that huge a deal. I
mm-hmm.
mean, it can be a catastrophic problem,
yeah.
but it usually can be fixed without draining the water.
You know, I think I like your theory, right, that the pool is a metaphor for Alice's mind. And I also think that one of the many ways that I read the crack was, you know, what it does, where we are sort of as a culture, or just that something so minor and insignificant, because you're right. I mean, I've swum in a lot of pools that had cracks in them and all kinds of things in them. And we don't really, we do it all the time. But this idea that everyone is so, you know, sensitive, everybody is so on edge, right? Everybody mm-hmm. is so in need of whatever the pool is bringing them, right? Space to themselves or away from their families or the whatever hell is in their lives outside of this public pool, that this very insignificant, potentially, again, I know nothing about pools. I did a lot of research on jazz. If I ever write about a pool, I will do just as much research and be able to speak more intelligently about pools. But the idea of a crack in a pool in the bottom of a pool, even if it expands a little, I think you're absolutely right. Why would this be so traumatizing to these people who use it? I mean, even before we get to the idea of the owners of the pool or the community space closing it, this idea that everybody is so upset by something,
right,
you know, so minor, to me is really interesting. And it's, you know, a crack.
I mean, if you swam in a public pool and there was a crack in it, you wouldn't give a shit.
Not at all.
It's not your pool.
Right.
You know, who cares?
Right.
Yeah.
And even if it started to, I mean, it is kind of interesting, and it's the joy, right, of, like, real life versus fiction, whether it's in a book or on TV, right? Like, in real life, probably, I don't know. I mean, but here's the other thing, right? You and I are not, I don't know this about you, I'm assuming we're not, like, swimmers who, like, I need every day. My grandfather was like this, actually. He went to the pool every day. It was his thing. He went to, they were in gyms, but even him, I can't imagine if he saw a pool, a crack at the bottom of the pool, would raise hell and ask people to do something about it. So I imagine that, and I certainly would never be bold enough to try to speak for Julia Otsuka, but I imagine that part of the idea here was that this isn't necessarily that significant. And yet, and you know, a crack is so literary. It's such a beautiful, the word crack sounds, you know, very nice to the ear in doing what it's supposed to be doing, right? Suggesting a kind of rupture. And the visual of a crack, you know, in concrete is really powerful, I think. And just the meaning of a crack in something that's broken, you know, is a really wonderful, I think, image to play with. And so creating this somewhat extreme situation where it's really disturbing the lives of these characters is interesting and clearly about something more than just people being irritated by a crack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it has, I mean, the other, to support my thesis of the pool being a metaphor for Alice's mind, when the crack starts to form, everyone starts to leave the pool kind of slowly.
Yeah.
You know, and if these are like the aspects of her personality, that makes perfect sense. That this is like, you know, these little parts of her life. And this is also getting old. Like, you know, right now I'm kind of I'm in sort of like the peak amount of responsibility. I have a job. I have young kids who need constant attention from a parent for 24 hours a day.
Right.
But, you know, 30, 40 years from now, that people won't need stuff from me as much.
Right. And
like some of those swimmers in my pool will stop coming because they're no longer needed, you know? And then Alice is the last one left in the pool. And then once Alice is the last one left in the pool, we transition into, second person and third person.
Mm-hmm.
And we're hearing Alice's stories from different perspectives.
I support your theory of the pool. Just so you know,
we'll have to have Julie on to talk about it.
Yeah. If you do, please let me just sit in and watch with popcorn from the sidelines. It'd be great to hear her thoughts on this.
Cool. Are you going to write a book in first person plural in the near future?
You know, I don't even think when I was younger, I think first person, especially first person singular, I think I read this somewhere, you know, for new writers, for especially young writers, it's the POV people use, right? In some ways, it feels, I don't think it is, but it feels easiest, right? And for young people, they like to write about themselves. And I can sort of confirm that as a professor who has taught a lot of creative writing classes. A lot of young people use the first person and tell stories that seem to be about themselves. And I don't think I definitely haven't as a grown-up. I don't remember as a teenager and a younger person. I probably did. I've never written in the first person. I've thought about, like, right now, I was reading a book and it was in the first person. I was like, I wonder if I should play with that. And there's something to me, just me as a writer and the way that I enjoy the craft of writing and the act of writing, that I don't gravitate to the first person. I feel limited. And I'm not saying that it's limiting generally. I'm saying for me, I like the sort of massiveness to me of the third person that I can do. I feel I can do more. I can see more as the writer, and it feels more pleasurable to me. I don't know if I, you know, I think this is hard to pull off, and Julia Otsuka does it. You know, that's why she was the Penn Faulkner Award winner of The Buddha in the Attic. And so the answer is no. I have no intention of writing in the first person plural. But I really admire her books for a lot of reasons. And one of them is that that's really hard to do. And to not only make it work for the story, but make readers keep turning pages.
I feel the same way. I think it's not something I would ever try, but and it's not something, if you would ask me, like, this is also, I actually get a lot of these on the podcast where, to the point where my tastes are now changing, but you know, if you would describe this book to me, this is a formula for a book that I will hate.
Yeah.
You know, like if you just, you know, it's about the swimming, most of it is in first person plural or second person singular. Like I hate books that are in second person. I hate all this stuff, but I absolutely loved this
book. I'm so glad.
So
yeah.
Yeah. And so it's like, it's not something I would ever try to pull off. It's also not something that I thought that I would have thought was possible to pull off.
And I think it's, that's why she's Penn Faulkner Award winner. That's why she's, you know, this is a really hard book to pull off. It's sort of similar to Daisy Jones and the Six is really a very, very different book. They're two very different writers. I think her name is Taylor Jenkins Reid, the woman who wrote Daisy Jones and the Six. It's a, like I said, it's a series on Amazon. I think three of her books are being turned into movies. They're really, really different authors, but that's also really hard to pull off. You're going to have 300, 350 pages of just block text of interviews of like seven or eight different people, but she totally did. I could not put the book down. I looked forward to going home or wherever I was going to be to read it. And so I really admire writers who, you know, take chances like that. I want to see how they pull it off. Yeah. I mean, this book, The Swimmers, I really loved the book. I couldn't put it down. So for me, it was a page turner. It was also really a really satisfying piece of art to contemplate and, you know, consider like, how is she doing this? How is she keeping me turning the pages? How is she making this shift from third person, first person plural to third person singular, right? How is she zoning in on Alice? And by the time we do in Alice's section, like I'm with her, right? I think it's an enjoyable book to read. And I think it's also a really interesting study in how to write a book, particularly one that doesn't follow a traditional structure and that doesn't follow convention.
Well, I totally agree with that. And I think that is a great place to leave this discussion of The Swimmers by Julia Otsuka. So Laura Worrell, we're going to ask you the question that we asked to end the podcast, which is to recommend two books to our audience. And I think Daisy Jones and the Six is the first
one. Why don't I do that? Daisy Jones and the Six. That's been a few years that came out. I haven't watched the show, but people say they like it, but I really recommend the book. I mean, for sure, the show is nothing like the book. I'd be interested, Lucas, if you read it, tell me what you think of it.
Yeah, it's on the list for sure.
And then the other book, let me think. This is a book called The River, the Town. In fact, I'm finishing my blurb for it today. It's by Farah Ali. This is her debut novel. So this is called The River, the Town by Farah Ali. She had a debut story collection called People Want to Live. And I believe this is her debut novel. And it takes place in Pakistan. And it's about, there's like a triangle of mother and her son and the son that, or the woman that her son is in love with that she doesn't approve of, but it's taking place in the backdrop of this very impoverished town. It's got a river running through it that's drying up. So it's about love. It's about family. It's about a planet in crisis. And I enjoyed it. Love to support debut authors. So I will recommend that book.
Excellent. Well, Laura, thank you for joining us, and we'll have you back when you write that second book.
All right. I would love it.
Pick up Sweet Soft Plenty Rhythm anywhere. Okay. Thank you. This episode of the Book Society Podcast is brought to you in partnership with the Miami Book Fair. The Miami Book Fair is a literary festival. It happens in Miami in November every year, third week of November. You can visit their website, miamibookfair.com. You can find them on socials. They're amazing. So if you've ever dreamt about meeting up with some of your favorite authors, some of the greatest living minds in literature today, the Miami Book Fair is the place for you. They have the best authors around, giving talks, giving lectures, just walking around, looking at all the tables with all the wonderful books. It's a great place to buy books. It's a great place to be around authors. It's a great place to read books. And Miami is just a cool city. So if you've never been, it's highly, highly recommended. Thanks, Miami Book Fair. Thank you for this episode. Thank you for previous episodes. Thank you for future episodes. I will see you in Miami in November.
I would like you to write an essay for me, and I would like a nice, strong thesis statement.